Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. It's hump day up in here, Dominic.
Hey, happy hump day, Crudy. Evan on the board, our fair audience. We are making our way through the week in another huge news day.
Huge.
It huge. Is huge.
Huge. Let me lay out a few of the huge parts to this big show. Dom, you will be quite happy to know. Although I stuttered there, just kind of double-ticked it. You'll be happy to know that maybe, just maybe.
Maybe?
Maybe the DOJ is investigating Donald Trump. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe it's happening behind closed doors. Behind the green door.
Yes, a subject, if not a target, certainly a subject of a DOJ investigation.
Well, we'll talk more about that, I suspect. You'll drag it out of me.
Oh, you know it.
Also, Dom, a returning friend, Andrew Seidel, a new author, attorney by vocation. And what's his new outfit, Dom?
He is the VP of Strategic Communications with Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Love that. He's got a new book, American Crusade, How the Supreme Court is Weaponizing Religious Freedom. We're going to have that conversation, talk about some white Christian nationalists, you know, the whole thing that we're all dealing with right now. Andrew's got some really good insight on.
I'm a little scared. I'm going to let you lead.
It's okay.
I'm going to let you lead a white Christian nationalism conversation. I'll just stand back here. I'll just watch from the first row. Also, our mutual friend, everybody's friend, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, the incomparable Maggie Dawn.
Yeah.
Maggie's coming back.
Maggie's coming back.
Happier happy hour for Maggie. Andrew Seidel at 420, so we better get to it. Because there is one local headline that should have caught all our eyes. Alex Lazary dropped out of the U.S. Senate race. Damn, that's got to sting $12 million in.
I mean, damn. Not just $12 million, Crudy. $12.3 million. Don't forget the extra $300,000, man.
Well, he certainly didn't spend it on radio.
Yeah. Maybe that's why he's getting out.
Well, maybe. Maybe. But, two candidates dropping out in the last 2 days, right?
Yeah.
Since Monday, Tom Nelson dropped out on Monday and endorsed Mandela Barnes. And then this was perhaps more surprising. I mean, Tom was out of cash. You know, if you got no money to spend your, 10 days, a little bit beyond 10 days beyond the primary, if you can't spend it in the last 2 weeks, Tom Nelson had no avenue. But why didn't Lazary think he had an avenue? I mean, he has spent a lot of cheese to get his name recognition up. And I mean, he's a nice guy. We've had him on. We had him on last week.
Sure. Man. Yeah. I like Alex.
He had the New York Times in tow. Does that mean no New York Times piece? They took lots of good photos of us. We're never going to see our pictures in the New York Times.
Oh, damn it.
Damn it. So anyways, Lazary gets out. What was your surprise? I was surprised.
I thought with the bankroll that he would go all the way. Bill Glauber and Daniel Bice, a little bit of background here from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, as they describe it, a stunning move with less than 2 weeks before the primary. Bucks executive Lazary on Wednesday dropped out of the race after spending $12.3 million on the contest. In an interview with Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Lazary said he's endorsing the front runner, Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. Mandela won this race, Lazary said. His withdrawal puts Barnes in the driver's seat to win the August 9th primary and face Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson in the fall. Lazary has consistently been running second in the polls to Barnes. An internal Barnes poll his campaign released this week showed Barnes up 39-25 over Lazary. Lazary said he spoke in recent days to Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin and reached out to Barnes on Tuesday to notify him of the decision. His quote from Lazary: after talking with Tammy and seeing the data, I think it was clear that there was no path forward for us to be able to win. We wanted to make sure we were able to unite and rally our support to ensure we're spending every second we can to get Ron Johnson out of office. It's clear the lieutenant governor is going to be the nominee.
Well, I've been sensing that since the DPW. The only one that's not ready to make that concession is probably the Sarah Godlewski team.
Right.
I mean, this is an opportunity for her. Now, obviously, it would have been nice if she'd have garnered either of those endorsements. She did get, who's your girl down in Milwaukee? Endorsed Godlewski.
Yeah.
I'm not bailing you out now.
No. And I'm not going to dig it. It'll come to me. State Treasurer Sarah Godlewski still in the race, according to Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, but has trailed Barnes by double digits even before Lazary and Nelson withdrew from the contest. Apparently, she was off the air for much of June and July. She's now back on the air with a $1 million ad buy. Told Madison reporters on Wednesday she plans to stay in the race through August 9th. I'm not changing. There's nothing new here. To me, it's always been about beating Ron Johnson, and who is the best candidate to do that? That's why I'm in the race.
Well, I understand why Godlewski's staying in the race. I mean, Mandela could trip. He could fall. There's lots of stuff that could happen, even in these last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But I'm shocked that Lazary would invest that kind of cheese, that kind of capital in this, getting out the name, and not play it out to the end. I mean, how do you get this close and just say, I don't want to stay up late on election night?
Well, I mean, there's strategy there as well, and it wasn't close. I mean, if those internal polling numbers that we just talked about were accurate, 39-25.
What have I been telling you my sense of the race was?
Seems to be going towards Mandela Barnes, yeah.
Well, by 10 to 15 points, you said, well, I said, yeah, that's my gut. I hadn't even seen Mandela's numbers. But, yeah, I think it's accurate. I think that he had a sense, you know, he didn't get the support in the straw poll. But Godlewski did. Godlewski did. And, you know, she doesn't have the Lazary sort of resources to expend in this race. And I don't want to personally pick on Alex Lazary, but I got to say, I'm happy that he's not the nominee. Very, very happy. Because how are you going to contrast, you know, the Bucks executive billionaire son with Ron Johnson,
right? A billionaire son-in-law.
I mean,
well, policy. And it's certainly the money thing that can be an issue for some.
Well, it's a big issue for me, and there wasn't. I mean, again, I'm not trying to pick on Alex Lazary, but you got out of the race, and now I'm going to tell a couple of candid thoughts. Go accomplish something. Go build your own personal resume. I know that the Bucks won in 6 a year ago. I get it. You didn't get any dunks in that final. That was mostly Giannis. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I don't think that Lazary was ready yet. He wasn't seasoned enough to be a U.S. senator. You know, mid-30s, man. Age is not the only determinant.
Right, Mandela Barnes is not an old man. Come on,
but
man,
Mandela's been earning it. Mandela's been out there doing the work. You know what I'm saying? Mandela served in the state legislature. Mandela lost a race to a lady that went on to endorse Sarah Godlewski. What's her name, Dom?
Ah, damn it.
I'm not bailing you out. So anyways, Lazary got out. And I think that Lazary has a bright future. Certainly. I mean, kid's smart. He's got good family, you know, good job to fall back upon. But politically, I'd like to see him go be a mayor, go be, you know, something, or get in the political fight more obviously, you know, do it philanthropically.
Go get in the mud. Use the money,
go,
right.
Go do what you got to do, but build the resume and then go run for something again. And with the $12 million of built up name recognition,
That helps.
You might just have a fighting chance.
I mean, that is a...
Sometimes you got to lose one to win.
Yes. No. I mean, you're not going to win every race. Nobody does. And he has certainly put the investment in. His name is out there. He still has, I think, some good cachet because of that. And... You know, with the money spent and the margin to overcome, knowing that, I mean, what, were you going to burn another couple of million just to, you know, place second? If you think it's going to be there, I think it's probably a good idea.
He was never going to place higher than second. The day he entered the race, he was destined for no higher than second. He didn't have the resume. He didn't have the chops. All he had was a big wheelbarrow full of cash. And he spread it around, and he made lots of friends. And he's a likable guy. What's not to like? Cute baby, nice wife, great ads. But he's not Superman. And he's not, you know, he's not a guy who's been out there on the stump for the last 10 years. I mean, and perhaps he'll get to that point. Maybe he'll never be super dynamic on the stump. Some guys aren't. See Joe Biden. But you know what I mean? He wasn't ready to win this race. He was destined for second or lower. And he certainly didn't want to end up fourth in the race, right?
Right.
Especially somewhere behind Tom Nelson, who withdrew on Monday. And I'm not saying Lasry would, but I thought the momentum had shifted away from Lasry. I just didn't think he'd picked up any momentum. I thought he'd lost a lot of momentum really going into the DPW.
Yeah.
Between the straw poll and the lackluster speech. Not a terrible speech, but, you know, he went against some damn good rhetorical speakers, and they looked better by comparison. And when he runs for Congress or U.S. Senate or governor someday, he'll be a better candidate, and he might be better prepared to win. But go work on your resume first. That would be my advice. Not that anybody ever asked for it.
Listen, going through the campaign, going through the process, that you know, you may not get $12.3 million worth of experience, but it's certainly a lot of experience, and his name is out there now across the state. Crudy, I had to slow brain it. Mandela Barnes lost to Lena Taylor, and Lena Taylor, as you mentioned, has endorsed Godlewski.
Oh, did she? You don't say. She ran for a few offices as well, didn't she, Dom?
She sure has.
Well, you know, Alex Lasry got out in a classy way. He threw his endorsement behind Mandela Barnes. I have had the feeling since maybe mid-June that Mandela was on his way. And Lasry was, you know, maybe going to be a distant second. Doesn't make him a bad kid. He's a nice guy. And when I say kid, you know, I called a 45-year-old today kid. I'm getting older all the time. Yes, that's more of a reflection of my aging than their youthfulness.
You're reverse ageist.
Andrew Seidel, a fine guest coming next. Dom's got the full resume, he'll tell you, on the other side.
We all know who you are. You know what? I'm happy.
He gone.
When they go low, we get high. The Devil's Advocates.
And we are back from the 420 break. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Our pleasure now to introduce our friend, Andrew Seidel. He's the VP of Strategic Communication with Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Also has a new book out called American Crusade, How the Supreme Court is Weaponizing Religious Freedom. Andrew, welcome back to the Devil's Advocates. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me on again, gents. It's a pleasure.
Yes, Andrew, excellent. I'm taking the first question. How is the Supreme Court weaponizing religious freedom?
I mean, if you were paying attention over the last few weeks, you got a good taste of how the Supreme Court is well on its way to turning what was once this hallowed protection that allowed people to believe as they wanted and live as they wanted so long as they weren't harming others, and really turned it into a tool, a weapon of Christian privilege, Christian supremacy, and Christian nationalism. I mean, there are a number of cases that came down, everything from the case that overturned Roe versus Wade to the case where the court allowed a coach at a public school to impose his personal religion on other people's children, to the case out of Maine, where the court said that taxpayers can be forced to fund religious indoctrination at Christian schools. So we are just well on our way along the road to theocracy here. It's an alarming time.
Andrew, the term religious freedom, like many terms that the right takes mm-hmm. over, I think there's different definitions depending on who you ask. How do you define religious freedom?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a great point, and especially now, basically, really starting with Trump, maybe even a little before, that term really got tortured and warped, which is part of the weaponization. They're turning it on its head. They do this kind of jujitsu move where something that was meant to protect minorities from the tyranny of the majority is now all of a sudden this tool of the majority to impose on the minority. And this is what I look at in the new book, American Crusade. We act like these questions are so difficult and so hard, and they're not. It's actually pretty easy and basic to draw these lines and answer these constitutional questions. The first line that we're going to draw when it comes to religious freedom is you have a right to believe as you want, and that belief is unlimited. But you don't have the right to act on that belief all the time. Right? Like the government can step in. If you say, God is telling me to kill you, the government can step in and say, hey, you actually don't get to do that. You might be able to believe it, but you don't get to do it. Right? Like, so somewhere along the spectrum of action that's motivated by religion, the government can step in and say, sorry, you don't get to do that. And that comes when we're talking about harming other people. That's really where we draw the second line. It's your right to swing your religion ends at the right, where the rights of others begin. It ends at the nose of other people, just as your right to swing your fist ends at their nose as well. These are not these questions that we make into these hard Supreme Court cases, and then we see the facts twisted and tortured. Really religious freedom now has come to mean that baker in Colorado who can deny service to a gay couple because his God says so. Or the right to put up a 30-foot tall Christian cross on government property and then force taxpayers to maintain it. There's a lot of good studies now that are coming out that show that the meaning of religious freedom has changed depending on who is using the phrase and who is hearing the phrase.
Andrew, of course, in these examples, it always favors Christianity. It's mm-hmm. religious, you know, freedom for Christians. Right. And I perceive myself to be a Christian, you know, rah-rah for my team, I guess. But, you know, the example that I had always seen, the Christ example, was helping out the poor and being a peaceful human being and turning the other cheek. But you talk about the white nationalism and mm-hmm. what actually is motivating them. Well, it ain't Jesus Christ, whether you think he's fact or fiction. They're not acting in a Christ-like fashion. So let me take the conversation that way, if I could. Tell us what the white nationalist movement is.
Well, I mean, really, there's an overlap of a number of different movements that we're seeing. I mean, if you take January 6th, for example, and look at kind of all of the disparate groups that were there on January 6th, you had the QAnon groups, you had the militia groups and the Second Amendment folks. You had this kind of wide swath of the right, I'll say, and they were united under the banner of white Christian nationalism, really. And that is, I mean, we're seeing, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene a couple of times, for instance, this week, talking about white Christian nationalism and Christian nationalism, and how they should adopt that label and be proud of that label. But if you're looking at the overlap between white nationalism and Christian nationalism, it's pretty, if that were a Venn diagram, it's getting pretty close to a circle. And it really is an important caveat on the Christian nationalism altogether. I think one of the things that people don't realize is Christian nationalism is an attempt to codify the privilege of a class that is shrinking demographically, right? Conservative, white, Christian, heteronormative men, right? They are used to a certain amount of power and privilege and not being criticized for saying and doing the things that are very worthy of criticism. And they have seen that shrinking in recent years. Really, the adoption of Christian nationalism, the wave of Christian nationalism that has been crashing over the country in the last 5 years, is a deliberate pushback on that loss of privilege.
Marjorie Taylor Greene had to say, I am being attacked by the godless left because I said I'm a proud Christian nationalist. These evil people are calling me a Nazi because I proudly love my country and my God. The left has shown us exactly who they are. They hate America, they hate God, and they hate us. We don't hate you. Our fine guest, Andrew Seidel, VP of Strategic Communication with Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Andrew, you're going to stick around for one more segment, at least a little bit into that segment. We got a few minutes
with you. Absolutely.
All right, folks, you stick around as well. Doug Mastriano has a consultant on his campaign team. He apparently is like the owner of Gab, and he went off on Jews and atheists. I want to play a little piece of that and get your reaction, Andrew, as well as our audiences. Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I need you white people that thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know how y'all do.
Marking 60% of the time, they're right every time. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show, the Hump Day Edition. Got a fine guest. He stuck around. Andrew Seidel, VP of Strategic Communications with Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and author of the new book, American Crusade, How the Supreme Court is Weaponizing Religious Freedom. Andrew, thanks for sticking around. Let's get back to those violent white nationalist insurrectionist bastards. The movement itself, is it a movement predicated on violence, or is violence just the means to the end?
Yeah, it's a really good question. It is growing ever more violent and bold as it is unchecked, essentially. One reason that consequences are so very important for some of what we've seen over the past few years. It is truly alarming. And if you look at the run-up to the January 6th insurrection, I helped spearhead and write a couple sections of a report that cataloged the role that Christian nationalism played in that January 6th insurrection. The rhetoric that they are using is being dialed up more and more and more to where violence is essentially inevitable. I mean, they're talking about this as warfare. And if you believe that your chosen candidate was chosen by God to rule the United States, right? The only thing that makes sense then, if you believe that truly, is that the election was stolen. And the only way to fight back against that is to actually fight back against that. I mean, that is why this is Christian nationalism is such a threat to a Republican form of government, to the United States of America, to a government of the people, for the people, and by the people. I've been screaming this now since at least 2019, and finally people are starting to wake up and realize what a serious threat Christian nationalism is to our country.
And were the precursors, Andrew, things like the Ku Klux Klan? I mean, we've seen other organizations predicated around sort of this warped Christianity. And, again, it's not... whether you believe in Christ or not, the examples of Christ are not what these people follow. They look at a guy like Donald Trump, who's clearly blasphemous, has never read the Bible, none of those things. But he's their vessel. He provides for them the God-like vessel, the God-like being whatever they perceive God's will to be. Trump was delivering that for them. So, I know I'm kind of mismashing some thoughts here, but... Andrew, can you help clarify my thoughts for me?
Let me jump into your brain and see what I can do.
Good luck with that, Andrew.
I understand the impulse to say this isn't Christian. This isn't my Christianity. I get that, but I think it also misses the point to a certain extent to say that this isn't real Christianity, because that is kind of beside the point. Christian nationalism is an entire identity that is based on disinformation and myths and lies, especially about the founding of the United States of America and what it means to be an American. You know, one of the things that they are trying to do is claim, and really the entire ideology is centered around this claim, this is why we call it Christian nationalism, that America was founded as a Christian nation. And at its most basic level, what it is trying to do is rewrite our history so that it can redefine what it means to be an American. So that to be an American is to be a Christian, and to be a Christian is to be an American. Or, to be more accurate, and what you're getting at is that true Christians, or excuse me, true Americans, TM, are conservative white Christian men, right? And the point of staking out that ideological group and that identity is that it's saying that this nation, America, belongs to that group and no other. And that is the truly sinister and really evil aspect of this claim. They are trying to rewrite the American identity to privilege themselves. And then with the help of the Supreme Court, as we discussed already, they're going to rewrite the law accordingly.
Oh, even Manifest Destiny back in the 1800s, right? I mean, the justification to expand west because God wants us to be from sea to shining sea. And certainly people had those thoughts, but that is a different perspective than the creation of this country. Andrew Seidel, VP Strategic Communication, Americans United for Separation of Church and State. I want to play for you, if I may, just under 2 minutes of Andrew Torba. He's with the Gab social network. He's also apparently a consultant with Doug Mastriano, and he has said some very terrible things. I want to get your reaction and perhaps some ideas on how to counter this ideology. If you would, please, Evan, play cut number one.
Now, Marjorie Taylor Greene is also coming under attack. She is getting loud with, the explicit Christian nationalism, and I love to see it. This is great stuff.
Wow.
So on the Cat Turd podcast, she said the GOP is the party of Christian nationalism and that Christian nationalist policies serve everyone. She's absolutely correct, okay? Me loving my neighbor is wanting my neighbor to be ruled by wise, biblical Christian men. Why? Well, look at the fruits. Look at the fruits of what happens when we allow pagans, Jews, non-believers, atheists to run our country, okay? What happens? What is the fruit of that? Well, the fruit of that is massive inflation, a border invasion, billions and billions of dollars being sent to foreign countries, a suicide epidemic in this country, deaths of despair, fentanyl deaths skyrocketing, and just this laundry list of stuff, okay? So this is what happens when non-believers are in positions of power and run our government. What happens when Christians are in positions of power and run our government and run our media and run our education system? Well, you get what we've seen in the United States of America and across Europe, well, across Europe for thousands of years, across America for, the first 200 years or so of our founding of this nation, which is the fruit of exceptionalism and of freedom and of liberty and of wealth. That is what happens when you have biblical, wise, Christian, biblical leadership that is running the country. It benefits everybody, okay? This is just the reality of the situation. So me loving my neighbor is wanting my neighbor to be ruled by Christians, biblical, wise Christians.
I don't want to be ruled by anybody, Andrew, let alone Christians. But what's your reaction to that? Again, this is a Gab CEO. He's on and consulting with Doug Mastriano. What's your reaction? And what's the best way, in your opinion, sir, to counter this thought process?
Yeah, I mean, what a toxic mix of ignorance and arrogance. And boy, have I got a book that guy should read. There was a pretty clear synthesis of Christian nationalism. You had all the disinformation about American history and how America is exceptional because of that fallacious history, none of which is accurate or true. And you have him clearly stating that Christian nationalism is meant to favor people like him, conservative white Christian men. And again, to take it back to what we were discussing at the outset with this Supreme Court and weaponizing the concept of religious freedom. We tie it all up in a bow because the conservative justices on the Supreme Court are reforging religious freedom as a weapon for Christian nationalists, so that there is this in-group which the law protects but doesn't bind, and everybody else is an out-group which the law binds but doesn't protect. And that's what you heard right there in that, I mean, just in that just awful bigotry.
Now, this, again, a consultant to a major, you know, political candidate, a Republican here in this country in these times today. What messaging, though, Andrew? I mean, can we actually counter with? Is it just, hey, you got to go get Seidel's book and you know, read up on these things? I mean, from a political standpoint, what's the best counter to the ignorance and the vitriol?
Yeah, in your opinion, sir. That's a really good question. I mean, first of all, groups like Americans United for Separation of Church and State are fighting against Christian nationalism, have been on the front lines battling this for some time, for a long time before most people realized that Christian nationalism was this threat. So I would really encourage people to go give to groups like Americans United, AU.org, join up. We need all the help we can get. And we really are, I think, actually what we might call a great awakening in this country, in that people are finally, we've taken for too long the separation of church and state for granted in this country. And after this past Supreme Court term and what the court has done and the emboldened Christian nationalism that we are seeing right now, people are finally waking up to the threat that it poses and to the danger of living in a country without that separation between church and state. And what we really need as a country is a national recommitment, because the separation of church and state cuts across every single progressive issue that most people care about, whether it's abortion rights, reproductive rights, LGBTQ rights. I mean, even things like voting in the environment. Separation of church and state levels the playing field and ensures freedom without favor and equality without exception. And what we really need today is a national recommitment to the separation of church and state.
Andrew, I know you got to run today. It's 4:44. I want to give you a heads up. Any final thoughts, anything you want to share with our audience as we wrap up this interview?
I'd love for people to go pre-order American Crusade. It comes out next month. I'm really excited about it. If you are struggling to understand what is happening right now and to make sense of all of this, as we've just been struggling on.
I'm struggling.
I'm telling you, the book doesn't offer all the solutions, but it really does help out. And then please go join Americans United, AU.org. We need all the help we can get right now, truly.
Andrew Seidel, VP of Strategic Communications with the aforementioned Americans United for Separation of Church and State. New book coming out, as he mentioned. Andrew, always a pleasure, man. Thanks for coming around. Good to see you again.
Thank you, gents. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates, and I was a busy, busy booker. We have another guest coming up shortly. His name is Scott Thompson with Law Forward. Law Forward has filed a lawsuit after Wisconsin Supreme Court absentee ballot decision. Some disabled people had some issues with that. Law Forward is going to address that. A little bit here from the Washington Post. Four disabled people are asking a federal judge to ensure they can vote this fall after the Wisconsin Supreme Court limited how absentee ballots can be cast. And I got to tell you, I'm going to be off this Friday. My mother, you know, she's getting older, not doing too well. She's in a senior living facility. We're going to move her to the same facility, but a different building for the memory care. She's, you know, slowly getting a little worse and worse. And she can't really get around much on her own anymore. She certainly can't drive, can't get into a car, can't do one of those things. Has to have a walker or a chair to move. And so these things matter, and not just necessarily for disabled folks, but for elderly folks like my mother. What are her options right now if she wanted to decided to go vote in the primary? I can't, apparently, according to current law, I am unable to bring her ballot to the drop box to her polling place for her. So what, I have to get her in the Jeep, you know, and bring her down there by herself at, you know, 77 years old and hardly able to get around? This is the answer? I don't think that's much of an answer.
What about the indefinitely confined? Like Rebecca Playfish apparently voted during the pandemic. What about that? Is that still exist? I can't imagine it does, but, you know, you can't keep up with every ruling of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Right. You really can't. because they're not really in it for expansion of voting. You know what I'm saying? They don't want you to vote.
Down. Well, isn't that or grandma, really or isn't ma. That really, really the case? That's the case.
Be a good son. Help your mama vote. Tell her not to vote Republican. Will you discourage that? She's not a Trumpster, is she?
She did not vote in the last election. She decided to do so. I don't know if she voted for Trump or not, honestly. I did tell her that I was going to deprogram, take Fox News off of the off of her cable. So she hasn't been watching it a whole lot. I didn't take it off. I'm sure it's still there. But she's been watching sports lately, which is great. You know, keep the mind active, keep yourself entertained. Folks, we will keep you entertained. Scott Thompson from Law Forward coming to join us next. Stick around.
Mama ever listen to this fine program?
She certainly should.
A race baiting, xenophobic, religious bigot.
The Devil's Advocates. Never personal, only politics.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. I want to thank our last guest, Andrew Seidel, with Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Now I want to welcome Scott Thompson, staff counsel with Law Forward. Scott, welcome to the Devil's Advocates show.
Thanks for having me.
It is our pleasure, sir. Very important issue here. You filed a lawsuit, your firm filed a lawsuit on behalf of several disabled people after the 4-3 ruling the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled that voters could not give their completed absentee ballots to someone else to turn in for them. What a terrible situation. Scott, why don't you give us a background on this, if you would, please?
Yeah, no sweat. And to make the sort of linguistic gymnastics a little bit more simple, we call it ballot return assistance, the process of giving a completed absentee ballot to somebody else, either put in the mailbox or actually take it back to the clerk's office. And so voters with disabilities really need special clarification on this issue in particular. Oftentimes these voters need ballot return assistance to cast an absentee ballot, and for even a different portion of that community, because they can only vote through absentee ballot without ballot return assistance, they just can't vote. So as we head into election season, as you referenced, the state Supreme Court and the Elections Commission have obscured, I think is a fair thing to say, what these rights mean both to voters, like the plaintiffs here, as well as municipal clerks. So we filed this lawsuit to resolve this uncertainty. It's really important that we sort of re-cement the fact that these voters enjoy bedrock federal civil rights protections that secure their right to vote.
Now, how do you know? I can already hear the Republicans and conservatives saying, well, you know, ballot return assistance, that sounds a lot like ballot harvesting, Scott. What is your reaction? What is a proper reaction to that concept?
Well, first, if there was any evidence of ballot harvesting, which I hate that term, the plaintiffs in the Tigan case could have presented it. They provided literally nothing about that issue specifically. And I think that reflects the fact that it's nothing more than a boogeyman. It's a problem that doesn't really exist. A problem that does exist is ballot access for voters with disabilities. And by sort of chasing this boogeyman issue, they have created an electoral landscape where voters with disabilities are just facing this uncertainty. And that shouldn't be the case. Everybody has a right to vote, no matter, you know, how you put your pants on in the morning. And I think it's important that we don't sort of rest on our laurels. We need to do everything we can to protect the right to vote. And really, this is what that lawsuit's about.
Scott Thompson, our fine guest from Law Forward. Scott, people with disabilities have special protection under federal law, including the American with Disabilities Act. My understanding from the reporting I've read, the AP's reporting of the lawsuit filed by Law Forward on behalf of, I think it's 4 disabled clients. What are the specific claims, if I may ask? What rationale from the Constitution are you using?
So, in essence, we believe that the way the Elections Commission is applying the law, the way that they're overseeing the administration of our elections, conflicts with federal law. And the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution says that when there's that type of conflict, federal law wins. And so I think a really good example of this comes from the plain text of the Voting Rights Act, which allows voters with disabilities to have assistance from someone they choose to vote. And so when state law or state authorities infringe on that clear language from federal law, the Constitution says, no, we rely on what federal law says.
But what is the remedy? I mean, you've got clients that will be affected in a partisan primary on August 9th. So what does success look like? Does it look like a stay where your clients are helped with or assisted with presenting their ballots? Or what does success look like?
Success for us looks like two things. First, an injunction that would restrict the ability of the Elections Commission to either, you know, to restrict the Elections Commission from in any way prohibiting ballot return assistance. And second, a declaration from a federal judge that reaffirms these federal rights have value in Wisconsin, regardless of what the Elections Commission or the state Supreme Court has said.
And what kind of time frame, Scott, do you think this is a realistic chance of getting some sort of resolution or something, some action in this case in federal court?
We think that we should be able to get some sort of relief, perhaps not all of the relief we requested, but some of it in advance of the November midterm elections.
November midterm. So the primary coming around, they're kind of SOL at this point. We got 3 minutes left, Scott. As a general sense.
Can I just jump in and say something
ahead,
real
please.
Quick on that?
Yeah.
Voters with disabilities are definitely not SOL. I want to be clear about that. The truth is that these people have the right to vote. They have these federal protections. They're certainly on the books, and people should enjoy using them. That's their right. The problem is that they have been obscured by the state Supreme Court and the Elections Commission. And so we need to just get rid of that risk. And on the ground, we think that this lawsuit can provide that relief before November. But that doesn't mean that these rights are just, you know, hanging in the balance for the next election. People should be able to vote as they need to under the way they are allowed to by federal law.
Thank you for that clarification. Scott, what's your sense of, I guess, the general efforts by conservatives and this whole election integrity effort that they're pushing forward, which, you know, I consider not to be anything about election integrity. It's about, you know, suppressing the vote. How do you see this progressing as we, you know, go down the line here? Next 2 minutes, please.
Well, two things. First, I think everyone should be able to agree that safe and secure elections are a good thing to pursue. But the second point is really important here, and that's that absentee ballot voting has been the target of misinformation and disinformation. And again, this is another reason why it's so important that as we head into election season, we get some clarification on these rights, just to make sure that those sort of nefarious actors can't take advantage of the constant stream of information on social media. And so that's why this lawsuit is so important.
Scott, if any of the Republican candidates wins the governor's race with a compliant legislative majority of Republicans in this state, do you have any doubt? I mean, we've got Tim Michels saying they're going to throw out the Wisconsin Elections Commission and effectively stack it predicated on congressional districts. It's going to be a lot worse than the WEC, the next incarnation. Your thoughts in like 30 seconds, Scott?
My thoughts are, I can't predict the future. I don't know what these people are going to do. I don't think anybody really does. All I know is that constitutional rights are important. When you got them, you got to stand up for them. And that's what we're doing.
Scott Thompson, staff counsel, Law Forward. Thank you so much for coming around and edifying our audience on these issues. Please, as more information comes forward and this lawsuit progresses, please keep us informed.
Will do.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates, the Happier Happy Hour. Coming up real soon, our pal Maggie Dawn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel. She keeps threatening to come by. I think she'll make it this time. Stick around. We will be right back.